It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me. Have to teach the children about living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in their hands. Watching us close, they follow our steps. If we do right, I'm sure they'll understand.
Hello, this is Deanna, and it is, what day is it? It's Monday, October 13th, 2014. This radio program, Spingola and Friends, does not have any corporate sponsors. Therefore, we are free to discuss controversial topics that you might not hear about on other programs. My website is spingola.com. There you will find information about my books, the Ruling Elite series, as well as a timeline of book 2 and 3, which is a work in progress. This last updated in June, so obviously I haven't been working on that lately, and I will tell you what I am working on a little bit further into the program. Please also visit the website of a dear friend and listener who has created and maintains the website, spingolaspeaks.wordpress.com. All of the more recent audio files of my programs are at this site. Those files include the RBN audios, the audio from the American Free Press Network, as well as the audio of this program. My new Twitter account is twitter.com/DeannaSpingola. We will take questions via the phone. Call 646-787-1915. We will also take comments and questions from the listeners via my email, comment@spingola.com, or from the chat room, which I invite you to visit, which is spingola.chatango.com. My guest today in the second hour, and I really goofed. I don't know what I was thinking, but when I emailed her, and it was just recent, we just decided to have her on Friday. But it is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, but she had another obligation. So she will be joining me the second hour. And I wasn't aware of this because I've been working on this project and just came upstairs to my office about a half hour ago. So this first hour is what I will call flying by the seat of your pants broadcasting. Anyway, I do want to share a few things with you. And, of course, we do know that today is the official day, Columbus Day, and I hope that you will all be celebrating it in an appropriate way. Also, if you want to call in and make comments about perhaps yesterday's program on RBN or whatever else you would like to talk about. But anyway, Columbus Day. Columbus, Columbus, Columbus. I wrote about him in my first book, which is my Ruling Elite series. And that book, of course, is, it's been out for a couple of years. And on page 162, I talk about Columbus. And the name of it is Slavery and Emancipation, Columbus in the Caribbean, Slavery and Slaughter. And now when Columbus arrived, there were between 70 and 100 million people living in the Americas, more than the population of Europe, which had only 60 or 65 million inhabitants. A century later, the settlers and explorers had catastrophically reduced the population of the Americas to a mere 12 to 15 million, and by the end of the 17th century, to 11 to 13 million. This descending curve began to move upward in the 18th century when the white populations began increasing. Now, certainly I did not write this to impose white guilt on anybody, because I don't believe that this has anything to do with white guilt. Slavery, as I mentioned in the book, is obviously an appalling violation of natural law, as most people understand and view natural law or the law of nature. Slavery is involuntary and without the consent of those compelled to labor for the financial benefit of others, because nature itself established moral standards. Therefore, it is applicable to everyone and everywhere. As used by founders, natural law employs logic to examine human nature to determine requisite rules of ethical behavior. Many of the founders claim to recognize and even publicly and formally advocate natural law as a regulatory monitor for human relationships. Yet many of them were slave owners who retained their slaves for the duration of their lives. George Washington magnanimously freed his slaves in his will. Hypocritically, the elite established the parameters of natural law, but failed to apply it to the people they considered below their cultural and social status, and they certainly did not regard the indigenous population or African captives worthy of such considerations. Even then, as now, there existed an enormous but apparently unheeded discrepancy between political rhetoric and political behavior. So anyway, I think most everyone that is familiar with my book, that particular book, understands that what I think about Columbus. Last night, very interestingly, I don't watch a lot of television, but my husband Bob is a television viewer, and I did watch one program, The Good Wife, and I know I watch TV with a very critical eye, and I noted a couple of things last night that are, well, I think they're kind of relevant, but The Good Wife is going to run for Attorney General of the state of Illinois, and Attorney General, yeah, I guess that's what she's running for. I wasn't paying a lot of attention because I'm working on a writing project. But anyway, they were really vetting her. Her potential campaign manager came in, and he was asking her all of these questions, and he had this huge file on her, her family, her brother, her mother, and went through this process, and he said, okay, we've got to talk about your mother, we have to talk about your brother, oh, by the way, we have to talk about your son. And apparently her son, now this doesn't sound relevant, but it really is. It talks about how I'm inferring that programming is really, really programming. And anyway, apparently her son had a girlfriend when he was 17. He just went away to college. He had a girlfriend when he was 17. The girl was 16, and they had an abortion. The girl had an abortion, and he had not mentioned this to his mother, Alicia Florrick, who plays the lead role in The Good Wife. He had not mentioned this to his mother. And he told her that he was going to go and look at some colleges and whatnot. But instead, he went with his girlfriend and her parents so that she could get an abortion. Now, Alicia was not upset that his girlfriend was getting an abortion. She was upset that he lied to her about going to check out of college. So the implication here is, okay, it's okay to get an abortion, and it's perfectly fine. But don't you dare lie to me about where you're going. The other thing that occurred during this vetting meeting with the potential her PR man for her campaign manager, is that during the meeting, which was in her apartment, the daughter had a bunch of friends come in, and one of them was dressed up like, well, I don't know what it was. It was pretty bizarre. And her daughter has embraced Christianity. And, of course, Alicia is not Christian. And this group of people, during this vetting process, were in the other room and carrying on like a bunch of, well, crazy people. And the person that was dressed up in this crazy outfit, well, it was just strange. And the potential campaign manager said, I feel like I'm in a Groucho Marx movie. In other words, it was ridiculing Christianity. And the other impression that I got was that if any good person really intends to run for political office, this is what is going to happen to you. You are going to be vetted to the point that you are not going to want to run. And this was the message of the program, is that good people should not even consider running for office, because they are going to dig into your past, your kids' past, your mother's past, your husband's past, and they are going to dig up all of this dirt, and they're going to actually invent dirt. So the message was that Christianity is stupid, and that it's okay to get an abortion, just be sure and tell your mother, and that if you are a good person, please don't ever think of running for political office, because, well, they're going to find out every dirty little secret they can about you. And I thought, well, good heavens, how in the world did Bill Clinton manage to make it to the presidency? How did all these crooks make it to the presidency without all of this dirt coming out? And of course, the dirt that we are now hearing, here in Illinois at least, between the two people who are running for governor, it's nothing but dirt and paying any attention to the issues whatsoever. Now, after that program, there was another program, CSI, which, well, quite conveniently, had to do with Ebola. And two of the investigators, I don't know who they work, but because as I mentioned, I was working on my project and I wasn't paying much attention. But I did look up from time to time. Two investigators were called to the scene of a crime. There was blood all over. The victim had been shot through the neck. They flipped him over, had blood running out of his eyes. There was blood all over. It was pretty awful. And they scanned the room, and, the camera scanned the room to the bookcase. And would you believe that on the bookshelf, there was a book title. You could only see the sides. It said Jim Mars. Now, Jim Mars is famous for saying that the Nazis, those horrible Nazis, have taken over the United States government, and they are running everything. And I'm thinking, first of all, of course, is that I wonder when this show was filmed. It must have been filmed prior to the Ebola scare, and of course it is a scare. I'm totally against fear-mongering, and, when I hear somebody fear-mongering, I have to ask, well, what are they doing? What is their purpose? And but anyway, this was certainly an interesting program, and of course the two investigators had to have hazmat suits put on. Of course, by then it was too late, but they had to be quarantined at the hospital. I don't know what happened after that, because, quite frankly, I was busy with my project. But it's very interesting that they filmed this. They must have filmed, you know, like I said, I don't know when they write these programs or when they filmed them. Interesting that this was conveniently shown at the time when Ebola has become this big scare. I received an email. Let me just go over this email. And this is purportedly from people in Africa. And it was written on October 8th, 2014. And it says, people in the Western world need to know what's happening here in West Africa. They are lying. Ebola as a virus does not exist and is not spread. The Red Cross has brought a disease to four specific countries for four specific reasons, and it is only contracted by those who receive treatments and injections from the Red Cross. That is why Liberians and Nigerians have begun kicking the Red Cross out of their countries and reporting in the news the truth. Now bear with me. The reasons. Most people jump to depopulation, which is no doubt always on the mind of the West when it comes to Africa. But I assure you, Africa can never, in capital letters, be depopulated by killing 160 people a day when thousands are born per day. So, the real reasons are much more tangible. Reason number one. This vaccine implemented sickness, being called Ebola, was introduced into West Africa for the end goal of getting troops on the ground in Nigeria, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. If you remember, we were just trying to get into Nigeria, Ko-Haram. BS. But that fell apart when Nigerians started telling the truth. There are no girls missing. Global support fell through the floor, and a new reason was needed to get troops into Nigeria and steal the new oil reserves they have discovered. Now, remember there was a bunch of missing girls, and they had to go in and try to find them, and it was just kind of strange. So anyway, it's... I'm just checking the chat room to see if there are any questions. We'll get back to what I was reading. I don't see any questions, just some hellos and everything. Okay, so there were no girls missing. Okay, and the global support fell through the floor, and a new reason was needed to get troops into Nigeria to steal the new oil reserves that they have discovered. Reason number two, Sierra Leone is the world's largest supplier of diamonds. Now, I'm sure all of you remember the movie, what was the name of that movie? I can't recall, but it was quite a movie. It was, I saw it at the local theater, and honestly, at the end of that movie, I felt like removing my ring and just, well, disposing of it. I just felt terrible. But anyway, Sierra Leone is the world's largest supplier of diamonds. For the past four months, they have been on strike, refusing to provide diamonds due to horrible working conditions and slave pay. Now, I mentioned slavery at the beginning of the program. The West will not pay a fair wage for the resources because the idea is to keep these people surviving on rice bags and aid so that they remain a source of cheap slave labor forever. A reason was also needed to get troops on the ground in Sierra Leone to force an end to the diamond miners' strikes. Now, isn't that interesting? Let me look and see if there are any callers. No callers. If you do want to make if you do want to call into the program, you can do that at 646-787-1915. And remember that we will be having Dr. Daniels join us in the next hour, and she is going to be talking about Ebola. And tonight I will be subbing for Clint Richardson on RBN. And our guest tonight will be Tony Pantoloresco, and I'm going to ask him specifically about Morgellons, which apparently, supposedly, we all have. So I will ask him about that as well as about Ebola. Okay, so back to the reason that they wanted to get soldiers into the country is to force an end to the diamond miners' strikes. This is not the first time this has been done. When miners refuse to work, troops are sent in, and even if they have to kill and replace them all, the only desire is to get diamonds back flowing out of the country. Of course, to launch multiple campaigns to invade these countries separately would be way too fishy. But something like Ebola allows access to the entire area simultaneously. Now, keep in mind that they're not sending healthcare workers. Who is Obama sending over? Military troops? What is it, 3,000 or 4,000? He's sending military troops to West Africa to help what? I don't know, to mop the sweaty brow of the Ebola patients. What a farce. And now we all know why. Okay, reason number three. In addition to stealing Nigerian oil and forcing Sierra Leone back to mining, troops have also been sent in to force vaccinations, deadly Ebola poison, onto those Africans who are not foolish enough to take the vaccine willingly. 3,000 troops are being sent in to make sure that this poison continues to spread because, again, it is only spread through vaccination. As more and more news articles are released, like the one above from Liberia, informing the populace of the U.S. lies and manipulation, more and more Africans are refusing to visit the Red Cross. Troops will force these vaccinations upon the people to ensure the visible appearance of an Ebola pandemic. In addition to this, they will protect the Red Cross from the Liberians and Nigerians who have been rightly ejecting them from their countries. Is this not interesting? This is just fascinating stuff. Okay, let me just check the chat room and see if Blood Diamonds. Oh, how could I forget that? Blood Diamonds is the name of the movie, and it was... It was quite a show. Another comment from the chat room. You know, the troops will be inoculated also to bring it home with them. Of course. They will be sick, and they will use this sickness to impose all kinds of rules and regulations and quarantines and all kinds of nonsense on the American public. So it's a double whammy kind of a situation where they can kill two birds or people or whatever with one stone, which they love to do. Love to do that. Okay, so the people, the Nigerians and the Liberians, do have enough sense to eject these people who are attempting to vaccinate them, the Red Cross, from their countries. That they must be smarter than some Americans. Okay, reason number four, 3,000 troops. Is Ebola susceptible to bullets? Ridiculous! Last but not least, the appearance of this Ebola pandemic, should Americans not catch on, will be used to scare countless millions into taking the Ebola vaccine, which in reality is the pandemic. The vaccine is the pandemic. Already, they have started with stories of how it has been brought back to the U.S. and has appeared in Dallas. Yes, Dallas, Texas. How white doctors were cured, but black infected are not being allowed to be treated, etc., etc., etc. All that will do is make blacks strive to get the vaccine because it appears that the cure is being held back from blacks. They will run out in droves to get it, and then there will be serious problems. With all we have seen revealed about vaccines this year, and I'm still reading from this document that I got, with all that we have seen revealed about vaccines this year, you would think we learned our lesson. All I can do is hope so, because they depend highly on our U.S. government to continue to allow flights in and out of these countries with absolutely no regulation or at all. We've got to start thinking and sharing information globally, because they do not give the true perspective of the people who live here in West Africa. They are lying for their own benefit, and there aren't enough voices out there with a platform to help share our reality. Hundreds of thousands have been killed, paralyzed, and disabled by these and other new vaccines all over the world, and we are finally becoming aware of it. Now, what will we do with all of this information? Well, it's kind of up to us to share it, to join others who know about this information. And I believe that there are many groups, many ethnic groups who are under the target. And I believe that we need to work together against the cabal. And I'm sure that you know which cabal I am referring to. We do need to understand who the enemy is and strike out against that enemy. Alrighty, that's all I have to say about the Ebola thing until Dr. Daniels comes on. And certainly we've all been getting these emails and all of this nonsense about Ebola. And some of it makes sense. And, well, some of it is just propaganda. I mean, I've gotten a lot of emails from this one person who is he believes what he's saying. It's just amazing. I was thinking this morning when I got up, I thought, gosh, I saw that program on Ebola last night, and I kind of have the sniffles this morning. Gosh, I wonder if I have Ebola from watching that part of that program, or from being exposed to it on TV. Some people would like to have you think that it's that easy to pick it up. All righty. One of my favorite doctors, and unfortunately he has passed away. His name is Robert S. Mendelsohn. I'm not sure when he passed away, but I wish I had had his book when my children were young, but I didn't. And the name of one of the books that I have, it's in my hand, How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Doctor. Now, he has some very, very good information, and I'm going to share some of this information with you. And one of which is, a lot of people, particularly with little children, as soon as something is wrong with that kid, they immediately run the kid to the doctor. But here is what Dr. Mendelsohn says. If your child doesn't feel sick, look sick, and act sick, the odds are that he isn't sick, or certainly not sick enough to require medical attention. How many times have you been tempted to call the doctor when your child complained of a stomach ache or headache, and then were glad that you didn't when you found him roughhousing with his brothers and sisters within an hour or two? He said, I've just given you the first of three rules that you can use to guide you in diagnoses. But I'll repeat it because it is most important. Rule number one, if your child doesn't feel sick, look sick, and act sick, he probably isn't sick. Rule number two, give Mother Nature ample time to work her magic before you expose your child to the potential let me just check and see if we have any callers, to the potential physical and emotional side effects of treatments that your doctor may administer. The human body has a remarkable capacity to heal itself, a capacity that in most cases surpasses anything that medical science can do, and it doesn't produce unwanted side effects, which brings up the book that we are familiar with, that Dr. Daniels has written, which talks about side effects, which talks about the standard of care. And she mentions in her book, and I don't have it in front of me, but the side effects are the real effects of the drug. There is just a slight deviation from when a medicine might help you and when it might kill you. Take, for instance, warfarin, which I've been researching recently. Warfarin was initially a rat poison. And what it did, what it does, is that it makes rats bleed uncontrollably. It makes them bleed to the point that it kills them. Well, they decided back in the 50s, warfarin could be used to prevent blood clots. And so they developed some medications, one of which is called Coumadin. What you have to do when you're on Coumadin is that you have to monitor the blood clotting capability within the blood so that you don't, in fact, bleed to death. So what you're taking, if you are on Coumadin, is you are ingesting rat poison. And hopefully you don't take too much, because if you do, you're going to bleed to death. But it's rat poison. And it's kind of interesting. I write a little bit more about it in my current writing project. Number three. Rule number three from Dr. Mendelsohn, and again, this book is How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Doctor. Common sense is the most useful tool in dealing with illness. Your doctor is less likely to employ it than you are, and certainly no more able, because that's not what they taught him in medical school. Granted, there are infrequent illnesses of critical nature for which competent medical treatment is essential. But in the case of children, they are the exception rather than the rule. The obvious question is, how can parents tell which ones are serious and which are not? The answer is that you can't always tell, and for that matter, neither can your doctor. However, after you finish reading this book, you will know a lot more than you did before you read it. Marching on, how doctors can make healthy kids sick. And this is chapter three. And this explains why pediatricians are so dangerous. And he was a pediatrician, which is amazing. Americans clearly are at the mercy of their doctors. And as a parent, you are even more so, because your concern for a child who can't make his own decisions makes you particularly vulnerable. Your child, in turn, becomes vulnerable to treatment that is often painful and debilitating, because doctors are taught in medical school to submerge any emotional response to human suffering. They simply don't pay enough attention to the pain they inflict and the damage that their treatments may cause. Now, I have a feeling that Dr. Mendelsohn and Dr. Daniels would be very good friends. If he hadn't passed away, and if they were ever in the same room and got to talking, they would become very good friends. Among doctors as a group, I believe the pediatrician is the most dangerous because he appears to be the most benign. The image of a pediatrician is most often that of a smiling, kindly professional who, along with his prescriptions, gives balloons and lollipops to your children. He undeservedly escapes the opprobrium, that is sometimes, I'm always mispronouncing words. Sorry about that. Readers don't often verbalize words, but anyway. That is sometimes directed toward obstetricians and surgeons who are more likely to be viewed as callous and money-grubbing. Now, why are pediatricians so dangerous? The confidence inspired by the demeanor of pediatricians is, in my experience, undeserved. It tends to mask the elements of pediatric practice that are threatening to your child. Let me recite briefly some of the reasons why I believe pediatricians are dangerous, and then get into the most serious of them later in greater detail. Number one, the pediatrician serves as the recruiter for the medical profession. Let me check the chat room and see if there's any questions or comments. Let me speed read here. Okay, one comment. We're waging war on Ebola so we can have more Ebola. Let's see what else here. Okay, people just saying hi. Hi to the people in the chat room. Remember that you can join those wonderful people in the chat room by visiting the chat room, and that is bengola.chatingo.com. You may also send me an email at comment@spingola.com, and I might actually see it. But but anyway, back to Dr. Mendelsohn. Let me just check briefly and see if we have any callers. I don't see any callers. Alrighty. Number one, the pediatrician serves as the recruiter for the medical profession. He indoctrinates your child from birth into a lifelong dependence on medical intervention. It begins with a succession of needless well baby checkups and immunizations, and then moves on to routine annual physical examinations and endless treatment of minor ailments that would cure themselves if they were left alone. Never, never dreamed of this, seriously. But when you think about it, why do people take babies who have nothing wrong with them to a pediatrician other than to get a vaccine? And that is the bread and butter of the pediatricians. Number two, pediatricians are the least likely of all specialists to tell parents about the potential side effects of the drugs and treatments they prescribe. What pediatrician ever told mothers of the evidence linking infant formula to high blood lead levels and sudden infant death? And of course, we have done programs on sudden infant death, which are typically caused by vaccines. And of course, we know what SIDS is, and that is what he's referring to. What pediatrician, until pressured to do so by media revelations, ever told parents of the risk of epilepsy and mental retardation associated with the immunizations that he performs? What pediatrician tells parents that antibiotics should be reserved for cases in which there is no acceptable option? That frequent and indiscriminate use may have adverse future consequences for the child. And I honestly believe, and I was very sick as a child. I had chronic ear infections. I had a mastoid infection. I went temporarily deaf in one of my ears. And of course, I had my tonsils removed, my adenoids removed. And your tonsils are one of the primary filters. Your tonsils, your appendix, some of these things that were automatically removed in the 50s and the 60s and into the 70s. People, doctors, said, oh, the tonsils are inflamed. We got to get them out. Well, they were inflamed because they were doing their job. Okay. And the more antibiotics that a child has, the more that they will need. the more infections that they will get, because antibiotics, keep in mind, are anti-life. They kill your immune system. They kill the good bacteria in your immune system. And your immune system does include your tonsils, your appendix, all the other parts of your immune system. Okay, number three. The pediatricians wanton prescribing of powerful drugs indoctrinates children from birth with the philosophy of a pill for every ill. This may lead the child to the belief that there is a drug to treat every condition and that drugs are an appropriate response to normal feelings of frustration, depression, anxiety, inadequacy, insecurity, etc. Doctors are directly responsible for hooking millions of people on prescription drugs. They are also indirectly responsible for the plight of millions more who turn to illegal drugs because they were taught at an early age that drugs can cure anything, including psychological and emotional conditions that ail them. Isn't that amazing? And this book, this book was written, let me tell you the date, 1984, okay? 1984. And this doctor, he's just absolutely amazing. I have so many post-it notes in this book, I think I probably have about 50. Anyway, moving on. Number four, excuse me. Pediatrics is among the lowest paid of the medical specialties. Consequently, because he has a greater need for the income they generate, the pediatrician is more likely than other doctors to order unnecessary x-rays and tests. The risks to the patient are twofold. First, potentially harmful effects from the tests and the x-rays themselves. Second, the danger that inappropriate treatment may be given because the pediatrician discounted clinical evidence in making his diagnosis and relied on test results that are too often unreliable. And I think there are probably thousands, if not millions of people who have relied on tests, particularly things like mammograms, which often, probably 33% of the mammograms that people take give a false positive, which sends many people, many women, to surgery, to radiation, to chemotherapy, which ultimately kills them. Most breast cancers dissolve themselves unless the patient receives medical intervention. Number five, pediatricians are so accustomed to seeing patients who aren't really sick that they often fail to recognize the ones who are. And Dr. Mendelson says, I have been an expert witness in many malpractice suits that bear this out. Board-certified pediatricians have overlooked important life-threatening conditions because they had forgotten what to look for in a sick child and missed the symptoms that should have alerted them to a serious condition. Meningitis is an outstanding example of this shortcoming because it is today one of the rarities in pediatrics. It used to be 95% fatal and now is 95% curable, but only if the pediatrician recognizes the symptoms and identifies the disease in time. Every pediatrician during his residency is taught how to diagnose meningitis. In fact, it is one of the few really useful things that he is taught. But that lesson is often blotted out after years of examining a procession of healthy children. To make matters worse, the pediatrician gets so accustomed to treating non-ailments that when he does properly diagnose a sick child, he may no longer remember the appropriate treatment. Is that amazing? Okay, let me check the chat room. Okay, let's see. Very important point about pediatricians not recognizing serious conditions or disease. That is so true. Absolutely true. Okay. Somebody else says, we've been brainwashed people have been brainwashed about doctors by decades of TV programs like Ben Casey, Dr. Kildare, I love that name, Kildare, Marcus Welby, another name, Welby, ER, absolutely. And if you don't think that the television is a programming vehicle for the population, as I mentioned earlier, they are. Programming is programming. And we don't realize it unless we look at programming, unless we are looking at the details and picking out exactly what they're trying, as I said at the top of the program, and watching those programs last night. Boy, what a revelation. Okay. Number six, because they see more children, in order to enjoy a profitable practice, pediatricians don't spend enough time with their patients to diagnose and treat them properly. Every competent physician knows that 85% of the accurate diagnosis is based on the patient's history, 10% on a thorough physical examination, and the remainder on laboratory tests and x-rays. It takes at least a half hour to an hour to take an adequate history and to conduct a thorough physical exam. Pediatricians typically spend 10 minutes with the patient and thus fail to discern much of what they need to know for a reliable diagnosis because they simply don't spend the time that is needed. The result is knee-jerk or cookie-cutter diagnoses in which habit replaces sound judgment based on careful examination. How true. And, of course, we all know if anybody has been to a doctor recently, you go in, you tell them what the symptoms, they look in their PDR, their physician's desk reference, to match your symptoms to prescription drug. They prescribe the drug. That's it. In, out, get your prescription, go and get it filled, and you're going to have side effects, but don't worry about it because side effects, well, those are happenstance, and they don't really happen to everyone, just some of the people. Okay, number seven, pediatricians are the most likely of all specialists to enhance their income by promoting and defending laws that force patients to use their services. It is pediatricians, not politicians, who are responsible for mandatory use of silver nitrate or antibiotic drops in a newborn's eyes, mandatory school physical examinations that provide opportunities for creative diagnoses of non-ailments, mandatory hospital births, and court-ordered use of controversial and unproven methods of treatment to which the parents object. Increasingly, one of the dangers inherent in taking your child to the doctor is the possibility that he may be taken from you and placed in state custody if you reject the treatment that his doctor demands. And Dr. Mendelson said, I have testified in behalf of the parents in many such legal actions in recent years. All right, number eight, pediatricians are the principal foes of breastfeeding, despite incontrovertible evidence that it is one of the most effective ways to assure the future health of your child. Although the La Leche League is beginning to counter the influence that the formula makers have long had on pediatricians, many doctors either fail to encourage or actively discourage breastfeeding. I won't go into all the reasons for this, but it is worth noting that the growth of the pediatric specialty in the United States can be attributed in large measure to the financial support of the manufacturers of infant formulas who have long used pediatricians as unpaid salesmen. Now, speaking of salesmen, the drug representatives are also called drug detailers. And they are absolutely pervasive. In this project that I'm working on, I'm talking about what they do, how they buy doctors, how they encourage doctors, particularly in the prescribing of psychiatric drugs. It is absolutely amazing. I have lost so much respect for drug representatives. And many of them have become whistleblowers lately, and it is absolutely amazing what these people do. They might as well put on a hoodie or go down and stand on the street corner in some seedy neighborhood and pass out drugs or sell drugs to vulnerable kids. That is how I feel about drug representatives, and I'm sorry if I have any drug representatives listening to the program. Shame on you. Get with the program and realize who and what you're working for. Okay, number 9. Pediatricians give tacit support to the unconscionable obstetrical I told you I butcher words, intervention that is damaging children physically and intellectually. They cover up the obstetrician's role in producing much of the damage that they see. When a parent has a child with a birth defect and asks a pediatrician whether the obstetrician might be responsible, he will get the reply that is taught during pediatric residency. And that is, don't look back, just look ahead. Dangerous obstetrical practices that produce retardation, learning disabilities, and physical abnormalities would disappear in a few years if pediatricians had the courage and compassion to place the blame on obstetricians, which is often where it belongs. Despite all this evidence of negative effects, let me see if there's any callers. I keep forgetting to look. Okay, no callers. No callers. Okay, let's see if there's any. I'm sure there's some comments in the. Okay. Oh, dear. Okay, here's one. Okay. Deanna, the drug representatives, in quotes, will not get with the program because they make upwards of $400,000 a year. They're always people with nice houses and nice cars. Quite a coincidence. Somebody else says, I used to work at a Walgreens as a pharmacy tech. Pharmacists were all pill poppers. Believe that. Okay. I think some doctors are pill poppers too. Okay. Despite all of this evidence of negative effects from pediatric care, the myth persists that American children enjoy better health care because of our abundance of pediatricians. That belief is wrong on two counts. First, infant mortality statistics reveal that American children are less healthy than those in many other developed nations that have fewer pediatricians. They're even less healthy than children in some of the underdeveloped countries. Second, unless, of course, you happen to be in Liberia or Nigeria or Sierra Leone, which are being infiltrated by U.S. military and by the Red Cross, who are trying to inject, poison. Okay, second, the reason our children are less healthy may well be because of our abundance of pediatricians. Despite evidence to the contrary, public health policy in the United States is based on the premise that access to care determines the health of a population. Doctors have succeeded in convincing politicians of this, even though they can't prove it. I believe that as long as emergency medical services are available, access to routine medical care probably has a negative effect on health. We've seen it happen in California, Saskatchewan, Israel, and elsewhere. call a doctor's strike and the death rate goes down. All righty. Key to health, stay away from doctors. The best way to raise a healthy child is to keep him away from the doctors, except for emergency care in the case of an accident or an obviously serious illness. If your child displays symptoms of illness, monitor his condition closely, but don't seek medical help until there are clear indications that he is seriously ill. Most doctors ignore the fact that the human body is a wondrous machine with an astonishing capacity to repair itself. If you take your sick child to a doctor, he probably won't allow it to do that. Instead, he will interfere with the body's natural defenses by giving your child treatment that he doesn't need and shouldn't get with side effects that his body is not designed to handle. If you become convinced that you should accept my advice and avoid your doctor whenever it makes sense to do so, you will learn to avoid the traps that pediatric medicine has laid for your child. The first of these is the well baby visit, a cherished ritual of pediatricians that enhances their income but does nothing constructive for your child. The hazard of these examinations is the proclivity of doctors, a heritage of medical school, to discover illness where none exists. The diagnosis leads to treatment, of course, with consequences that may actually make your child sick. The time to see a doctor is when your child is really sick, not when he is well. If your pediatrician asks that you bring your baby in for routine, regular checkups on a monthly, bimonthly, or other regularly scheduled basis, ask him why he thinks this is necessary. Ask him if he knows of any objective studies that indicate it will have any effect in improving your child's health. I've never seen one, and I don't believe he will be able to point to one either. Okay, let me skip ahead. When your child enters a pediatric examining room, he is almost invariably subjected to height and weight measurements, usually taken by a technician or a nurse. This is part of the ritual modern medicine has developed to make you feel you are getting your money's worth. First-time parents wait nervously while the nurse places the squirming baby on a scale and may be asked to help hold the baby's legs down so the height can be measured. Mom and dad sigh with relief when their pediatrician finally appears, checks the measurements against a chart, and announces their child is developing normally. Conversely, they are worried if they are told that their baby is gaining too much or too little weight. What their doctor doesn't tell them is that this ritual has no medical significance whatsoever. They aren't told that some formula manufacturer is probably the source of the growth chart that the doctor is using and that he gets them free. That leads to an obvious question. Why are the formula makers so eager to have your doctor check your baby's weight? Answer: because the weight gain of breastfed babies might not match the average weights shown on the formula maker's chart. They hope that the pediatrician, instead of reassuring the mother that it is normal and non-threatening, will tell her to stop breastfeeding and switch to their product, of which he has a handy reminder in his hand too often. That is exactly what he does, and the baby is subsequently denied the immunity and other benefits that breastfeeding provides. Wow. Well, I'll tell you what. If you know of someone who is going to have a baby, who is thinking of getting pregnant, if you can get pregnant anymore, there's so many things that have caused the fertility of America's females to decline, buy her this book. Now, as I mentioned, it was published in 1984. You can buy them at Amazon for a penny plus shipping. It is a paperback. I highly recommend it. What What can I say? The doctor also wrote another book. It's called Confessions of a Medical Heretic. And it is amazing. It talks about the Church of, of medicine. And it is a religion. My goodness. I think, let me check and see if Dr. Daniels is available, and I will add her to the call. Hopefully I can do that. Gosh, I hope I can call her. Okay, let's see if we can add her to the call. Let's see. I'll see if she's available. Are you available? Okay. Skype sometimes has given me trouble in the last couple of weeks in adding people to a call. So if not, then I will ask her to call into the program. Let me just check and give her the phone number so that she can call into the program. And because it does not look like I have the capability of adding her to the group, so I'm going to type, please call, and we'll hopefully she'll call in. Oh, I love these fly by the seat of your pants programs. Well, not really, but okay. Yes, okay. Alrighty, I'm okay. Okay, she said yes, so hopefully she will be calling momentarily, and we can talk to a real professional who can really talk about medical issues, which, of course, I'm not a doctor. I've never played a doctor on television. I've never been in a commercial. I've never been paid to talk about these various products that you see on these commercials where they tell you all of these benefits. However, they actually fail to. Okay, here she's calling in. Bless her heart. Bless her heart. Is that you, Dr. Daniels?
Yes.
Hello? 561? Okay, okay, that wasn't her.
Yeah,
okay,
this is Dr. Daniels.
Oh, hi, how are you? Okay, you're the 561.
Hello.
Okay, you're the 561 number?
Yeah, I'm 561.
Okay, we're going to just mute the other guy. Okay, 561. Dr. Daniels, I'm so sorry that I goofed on the time. I was listening to or thinking about your wonderful event that's coming up, and I think I just typed in 9 a.m. because I was thinking about this wonderful opportunity that people have, and that's the marathon, which is going to happen on October 16th. And so I was reading that, and I thought, oh, 9 o'clock, okay, 9 to 11, which in fact, well, obviously it wasn't 9 o'clock, but anyway, welcome.
Thank you. So we're going to talk about Ebola.
Ebola. Yep.
Now, okay, talk about the quarantine?
Pardon me?
Did you want to talk about the quarantine?
We can talk about anything that you'd like to talk about regarding Ebola. I shared with the listeners what is going on actually in West Africa, that it's just a big hoax. And so talk about anything that you want to talk about regarding Ebola. It is you know more about it than I do.
It's a broad subject. All right, so I know what you told us about Africa. I know there's a lot of staged events going on there and stuff. So let's just talk about just the reality. What do we know? Or what do we think we know? Let's get some perspective. The first Ebola outbreak was 1976, and the Ebola has been sweeping the world and about to kill us all since 1976. I went to medical school in 1979 to 1983, and as medical students, we were told that there was this awful, deadly, flesh-eating, incurable Ebola coming to us from Africa, and it was going to kill us all. And that we as doctors were going to be on the front line assisting the government with, you know, disease containment and blah, blah, blah. Of course, there's no cure for this deadly whatever it is. And so that was 1979 to 1983. At the same time, they had the AIDS kickoff. And, of course, AIDS was started supposedly by some person in Africa who took a plane to someplace else, and then, boom, he must have sex with 10,000 people, and, well, the rest is history. And so apparently the story about a promiscuous African riding on an airplane was much more attractive than this Ebola spread by nebulous memes or spread by casual contact. So the AIDS thing took off, and I kept waiting to hear about this Ebola because, I mean, flesh-eating deadly bacteria. I'm like, oh, my God, this is awful. But I didn't hear anything more about it. And there were attempts to launch the Ebola epidemic. If you go to the World Health Organization, you'll see a list of all the outbreaks since 1976. And these outbreaks were pitifully small. They were killing more than 600 people. And then you dig a little deeper and you find that Ebola is linked to bushmeat. Well, what's bushmeat? Bushmeat is food. What is something you get when you eat food? It's called a foodborne illness. And so Ebola is essentially a foodborne illness. And it's contracted by eating contaminated food. Now, how the food got contaminated, who contaminated it, we won't even go there because once you know it's a foodborne illness, then all the foodborne illness characteristics basically apply. And so what do we know about foodborne illness? Well, foodborne illnesses are characterized by nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, dehydration. Death is caused by dehydration. It means depletion of water, depletion of salt, depletion of potassium. And you get hemorrhaging, bleeding in the intestinal tract when the dehydration is so severe that you slough off cells and then you start getting bleeding. Okay, so now we have here a picture of basically a foodborne illness and its natural decline into death if nothing else intervenes. So with that background, we can see why Ebola has never really taken off. It hasn't really taken off because it's not linked to a commercial food supply. So it's not linked to a tractor trailer load full of frozen patties that are distributed far and wide throughout, say, the country. And so each epidemic or outbreak, if you want to call it that, is sporadic and self-limiting. This is, you know, this is what we've found. So let's see what the CDC says. And so I'm sticking to this, the party line, what officials are saying. And this is from the Connecticut, the West Hartford News. And what they're saying is, according to the CDC, and I've read this too, and the World Health Organization, Ebola is not airborne. That means wearing a mask of any kind is of no use because it just isn't spread that way. And it's spread only through direct contact. What kind of direct contact? This is substantial contact. You need to have broken skin. So it's got to get in through broken skin directly into the blood. Ebola does not have the ability to infect you if it ends up on top of your unbroken skin. Can't do it. No can do. So there's no reason to fear an Ebola person coughing on you or shaking your hand or even rubbing up real close to you because it just isn't spread that way. So you need to have broken skin, and then the other person's bodily fluids have to have contact with that broken skin. So their blood or their vomitus or their urine or their feces has got to come in contact with your broken skin. This is a substantial level of contact. And I dare say most people don't have that kind of contact with the outside world in a whole year. I mean, Deanna, you're married. How many times did your husband spill his bodily fluids into your broken skin? You know, it's not a frequent occurrence.
No. No. And you mentioned
to get that close.
Yeah. And I had sent you this article about Connecticut actually imposing a quarantine. And I'm thinking, what in heaven's name are they doing? What is the purpose of this?
See what they're doing. Let's take a look and see what they're doing. I have the article. My clicker here is a little slow. But while we're waiting for that to come up, why don't we go take a look at Wikipedia and see what a quarantine is. So quarantine is used to separate and restrict the movement of persons. It's a state of enforced isolation. It's used in connection to diseases and illnesses, such as those who may possibly have been exposed to a communicable disease. So we can see here that Ebola is not a communicable disease as in person-to-person contact. It is communicable in terms of a foodborne outbreak if you're eating contaminated food. And if you go on YouTube, you can find these videos from the 70s, I guess the 80s and 90s, where they talk about bushmeat being imported into the United States illegally. Obviously, you have these African communities who want their own meat they're used to eating, and they import this bushmeat and they eat it. And so you have this reporter trying to show that this corner store is killing people by importing bushmeat. Of course, it's ludicrous. But anyway, so quarantine is not the same as isolation, separate ill persons who have a disease from those who are healthy. And so it comes from the 17th century Italian quaranta, meaning 40, which is a number of days ships were required to be isolated before passengers and crew could go ashore during the Black Death Plague epidemic. So basically, in the quarantine, you are isolating people, preventing them from coming in to an area of health. So you're taking people who might be sick and preventing them from coming into an area of healthy people. This is not what they're doing in Connecticut. Well, let's see what Connecticut has said. So two Yale doctoral students are being quarantined as a precautionary measure after traveling in a country where an Ebola outbreak has occurred. So they traveled in a country that had Ebola, so there's no evidence they've been exposed to Ebola. Also, we know that these two students who have no symptoms are not contagious because Ebola is not contagious in asymptomatic people. Okay.
Wow.
So students have not experienced any symptoms related to the disease, so there is no benefit to quarantining them. Only once they develop symptoms. So there's not an asymptomatic phase of Ebola where it can be contagious. So you can't make any kind of case to justify quarantining someone, even if they've been exposed to Ebola, because they're not contagious. You know they're not contagious. They're not contagious until and unless they have symptoms. Okay, so again, the CDC reiterates it cannot be transmitted through the air, period. People can spit on you with Ebola. They can cough on you. It cannot be transmitted through the air. Now, the recent outbreak has infected more than 3,000 people in West Africa. That really is a very small number. The Associated Press reported Friday that a hazmat crew was returned to a Texas apartment where the U.S. Ebola patient stayed to collect bed sheets and towels used by the infected man before he was hospitalized. And so what they're now doing is saying, okay, because we suspect Ebola might be here, we now have the right to break and enter into your apartment and take your possessions, in this case, bed sheets and towels. If you look at the price of bed sheets and towels, they're pretty darn expensive. So why collect bed sheets and towels?
Exactly.
There's no reason, because Ebola is spread. It's a foodborne disease. They should have cleared out the refrigerator, but they took the bed sheets and towels. Now, this is very important, so note bed sheets and towels. So a family living in the apartment has been confined to their home under armed guard while public health officials monitor them. We don't know what monitoring means. Do they have to get daily body cavity searches? Are they getting blood taken from them? What is this monitoring? What form is it taking? We are not being told. So part of an intense effort to contain the deadly disease before it can get a foothold in the United States, AP reported. Well, we know that Ebola can't be spread to the people you live with unless they ate the same contaminated food. It's a foodborne outbreak, a foodborne disease. And so what does this tell us? it tells us that Ebola is being used as a reason to detain people against their will. It's called kidnapping. And it's being used as a reason to break and enter into people's homes and take their possessions. Now, they took the sheets and towels. We know Ebola doesn't live on sheets and towels. We know that an infected person can't spread it through sheets and towels. The CDC told us so. So what is this? This is a test. Are American citizens going to stand by and allow the government to enter people's homes and take their possessions under the Ebola pretense? It's sheets and towels today. I assure you it's going to progress to furniture, stereos, jewelry, and other possessions of value, and even the house itself. So this is a test. This is a very serious test, and Americans have to decide how they're going to respond to this test.
Wow. And a lot of Americans will cower and allow this to occur simply out of
fear.
But
you know what? I have a solution. So you don't even have to be too brave to exercise this solution.
Okay.
So it turns out that there's 48 million Americans every year that get fever, vomiting, and diarrhea from foodborne illnesses. 48 million people, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
They have told people that if they think they might have Ebola, they should go to their doctor. What have they told the doctor? The doctor's been told if you think a person might have Ebola, don't even test them. Call the health department. The health department does what? They then kidnap the person. They send armed guards to the person's home to quarantine the occupants for 21 days, and they take whatever objects from the home they feel like taking. So this is a sequence here. So what do you do? If you have a fever, if you have diarrhea, if you have vomiting, stay home. Don't even get started. Don't even activate the sequence.
Wow.
That's all you have to do. That's all. That's it. Stay home. And then if you know somebody who has diarrhea, vomiting, and a fever, don't even take them to the health establishment. Stay home. Because the test they have that diagnoses Ebola doesn't even test for the virus. And so it's designed to have a certain number of so-called false positives. In other words, to show positive, even if the person has no disease and certainly doesn't even have Ebola. So if you take 48 million people and run them through a test, a certain number of false positives, you're going to get at least a million positives. And they're going to call that the Ebola epidemic.
Oh, my gosh. And as you say, a lot of people do get food poisoning. A lot of people do have nausea, vomiting.
Not a lot. 48 million. We got a number. We got a number. The CDC says
yeah.
48 million. This ain't a lot. It's 48 million. You decide if that's a lot.
Yeah. Wow.
So the audience needs to know that their responsibility, if they want to stop the madness, is if they get a fever, if they get vomiting, if they get diarrhea, under no circumstances should they seek medical attention.
Wow. And it's kind of amazing that I was mentioning at the top of the program that I had seen a program last night where it showed a report purportedly Ebola patient, and this guy had blood coming out of his nose, out of his eyes, out of his mouth. And, I mean, they just look ghoulish. And that was designed to frighten people. And first of all, I don't know how they managed to get this program written and out just at the exact time that everybody in America or that people in America were being exposed to an Ebola scare. I mean, this is all very coincidental to me.
It's choreographed.
Yes, of course it's choreographed.
Yeah.
Amazing. Oh, my gosh.
So, now, your audience is probably thinking, yeah, Dr. Dan, it's easy for you to say, just stay home. What if I'm dehydrated? What if I'm, you know, whatever. Okay, well, I happen to have connections, so I'll tell you about my connections. This was actually 1990-something. So I was a member of the American Medical Women's Association, and I was traveling doing lectures for them. And I had a handler. When you're doing these lectures, you need a handler. You need someone to make sure you've got a hotel room, to make sure there's some place for you to eat, to keep the schedule, make sure everything happens so you can even be where you're supposed to be. And so we were talking, and I told her I was interested in natural stuff. She said, really? And she was ethnically from India. That was her ethnic background. But her parents and her grandparents were overseers in Africa. So it was her grandparents were in charge of slave plantations in Africa. And back then, this is going back almost 100 years, they had vomiting, diarrhea, and febrile outbreaks. And these outbreaks of foodborne illness or illnesses related to water contamination would cause a tremendous amount of death, especially among the young kids. And so the children would die. And so they came up with this recipe, and they would boil it up. The kids would drink it. Boom. It would stop the diarrhea, stop the vomiting, and the kids did just fine. So I'm going to share that recipe with your listeners.
Okay.
So it's 1 quart of water, preferably free of sewage, but if it's not, do the best you can. 1 quart of water, 1 tablespoon of fennel seed, 1/2 teaspoon of whole cloves, and 1 clove of crushed garlic. Boil the whole thing for 15 minutes, strain it, and sip. I do mean sip. And usually about the third sip, the vomiting stops, and about the fourth or fifth sip, the diarrhea stops. Very nice.
Wow. Now that sounds similar to one of the antibiotic recipes or one of the antibiotic solutions that you give in your free booklet, where you list 10,
yes.
10 things that,
yes,
that
exactly.
we can take.
Exactly. You can go to my website, sign up for the free report. Exactly. And that's what I use it for, gastroenteritis, vomiting, diarrhea, fever, boom, takes care of it. Isn't saved many a fishing vacation, all kinds of stuff. People just have diarrhea and nausea and vomiting, and it goes right away.
Wow. Perfect.
So they can go to my website, vitalitycapsules.com. Actually, we have a promotion now. I'm having a question-and-answer marathon on Wednesday. And people can sign up for the marathon at my website, vitalitycapsules.com. And, get their questions answered, whatever questions they might have. And I'll be on the air for 3 hours answering questions.
Which is amazing. Now, this is a marathon. It takes place, in 3 days. And you're going to answer all these questions. And people always have questions. And and so you've got this secret 3-hour marathon, especially for people who just want these simple questions answered. You're not going to give, great big huge answers, lengthy answers, but just simple medical questions that everyone has that you really don't have the time to answer a lot of email questions.
Right, I don't.
Exactly. You have a lot of listeners, and
yeah,
you just don't have the time.
It's really an easy way for people. I think it's $30. I'm not sure how much it is.
Mm-hmm.
The marketing guy can handle that.
Okay. All righty.
But, I've written a few jokes. Can I share some of my
jokes? Oh, yes, please. Please tell us your jokes.
All right. I got a whole bunch. I'm going to read you the Ebola ones. Okay, so here we have C. difficile is having an argument with Ebola. So C. difficile says, I'm jealous. I only get credit if the culture is positive, not like you. You get all the press, and you aren't even there. And Ebola
How
says,
true.
I'm so powerful. People think about me, and they die.
Wow. Wow.
So, of course, it means this is a lot of superstition here. And they want you to just think about Ebola. That's all you have to do. Think about Ebola. The doctor will provide you with the positive test. And then they'll provide you with some deadly drugs and vaccines. And you'll die. And you and your family will think that you died of Ebola when actually you died of the belief in Ebola. And this is an argument between MRSA, methicillin-resistant staff, and Ebola. So methicillin-resistant staff says, I murder 29,000 Americans a year. It was reduced to 23,000, I'll admit that. And I can't even make the front page news. How do you rate? And Ebola says, I'll admit, I have not killed even 10 Americans. But I've got better PR. Besides, the 48 million Americans who get food poisoning every year will soon be reclassified as Ebola. I got you beat.
Wow. And I do believe... Yeah, I do believe that people are so frightened by this. Some people are so frightened by this that that is exactly the route that they will take. They get the least bit ill. And people do get food poisoning because, well, it just happens. And
no,
they
the CDC
will...
says 48 million Americans every year get food poisoning. 3,000 die. 3,000 deaths. This is a... They don't have... They, numbers from more recently than 2011, they should be ashamed of themselves, but this is what they say. So 3,000 deaths. And we've got our own Ebola epidemic right here going on. We've got foodborne illness already here in the United States. How come there was no need for 21-day isolations, apartment searches, people quarantined at gunpoint and seizing people's property before now?
Right.
I don't know.
Wow.
I'm not in charge here. So here's some more Ebola jokes. This is a young girl. She said, I wear this T-shirt for self-defense. My concealed carry weapon permit is useless since my aim is so poor. And the T-shirt says, hug me, I have Ebola. So, of course,
amazing.
With the T-shirt saying I have Ebola, the guys won't mug her or bother her.
Yeah. Wow.
And, oh, I have a whole bunch more. I have a few more Ebola jokes. This is a doctor, Ebola joke. Doctor, your Ebola test is positive. I'm calling the government police to have you detained. And the patient says, but doc, that test is a fraud. It doesn't even test for Ebola virus. Doctor says, sorry, it's the standard of care.
Oh, that standard of care is so amazing. I mean, you introduced me to that in your book. And
yeah.
I have done some more research on it, and it is just amazing how that was devised and how it's used, and it's an amazing concept.
Yeah, and how it's used to murder so many Americans.
Yeah, yeah.
There's another Ebola joke.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I do need to ask you a question.
But
after you tell your, go ahead and tell your joke, and then I have a question.
These are two guys in the hood. So one guy says, hey, did you hear about Ebola? The guy says, yeah, vomiting, diarrhea, bleeding to death. Sounds like that E. coli you get from eating at fast food joints. Who they trying to kid? Don't need to go to Africa to get that.
Indeed. Wow. Somebody made a statement just recently that everyone...
Uh-huh.
Absolutely, everyone has Morgellons or Morgellons, and that we just don't know it, but we all have it. Could you make a statement on that, or not?
Yes, I can make a statement on that. I personally don't agree with that. I do agree with the position that most people have been exposed to Morgellons. And I do agree with the position that whether you actually get these, I guess what we're really talking about here is Lyme disease, is the state of your immune system. But where does all this come from? And I think the susceptibility to Morgellons comes from vaccination, comes from chemtrails, comes from chemical poisoning in our environment. And by focusing on Morgellons, we are being distracted from the real cause of our suffering, and we're not addressing it. It's like this whole Ebola thing. Everyone's focusing on the Ebola organism, and no one's looking at the kidnapping, the incarceration, and the seizure of property and breaking and entering people's homes. That's the real story, and that's what's really happening. And the question is, how do you get people, American citizens en masse, in large numbers, to accept being kidnapped, being the victim of breaking and entry and theft on the part of the government? And the way you get that is by using an Ebola organism or a foodborne illness.
Wow. And of course, it is a matter of distraction. And people get so caught up in their fear that they really don't understand what the goal is.
Yeah, let me give you an example of hypnosis. This is awesome. Okay, so we have a story about Ebola and about the quarantine in Connecticut. And even based on what's in the story, there's absolutely no basis whatever for the quarantine. It's pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's see what people are saying. This is on the Internet, and these are comments. I'm guessing there's more about these two that we are not being told, possibly to the detriment of all around them as they travel to and then within Connecticut. Okay, so in other words, rather than taking the facts that they have, drawing the conclusions that are obvious, and saying, if you want me to draw a different conclusion, the burden is on you to produce more information for me. Right?
Right.
That would be an adult perception. This person is saying, you know, there must be more information that we're not being told. And so I'm going to believe that this is reasonable because I know that secret information, once revealed, will explain everything.
Right.
Okay, so here's another one. Another guy says, well, I can't help wondering, why quarantine anyone who has no patient contact or activities in a clinical setting and has not experienced any symptoms related to the disease? If that's the case, this quarantine would certainly be a first, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Then they go on to reiterate, the CDC confidently states that Ebola is not airborne, can only be contracted through direct contact with bodily fluids if someone is actively sick with it. It cannot be transmitted through the air. And so, and then this guy goes on to say, I don't know, but maybe they've come to discover while there, there's a justifiable concern that while it's not officially airborne, maybe aerosol droplets from a sneeze or cough nearby could be seriously risky, as well as anything they later touch that, unbeknownst to them, had those droplets deposited upon it earlier, too, like public building doorknobs and restrooms and taxis and hotels and restaurants. So this person is, in their own mind, fabricating a whole storyline.
Right.
Which has not been supported by the article that they wrote. That they read. And so they're hypnotizing themselves.
Right.
They are filling in lies in their own brain to justify the government's unreasonable quarantine. I mean, it's unreasonable, right? They're saying these kids who came from Africa didn't have contact with anyone who had Ebola. They weren't in clinical contact with sick or symptomatic people. And you know, it cannot be spread unless the person is sick and symptomatic. So there's no reason to quarantine these people. But they're going along with the quarantine. No one's got a lawyer to sue the government. No one's challenging this. This is good. This is good. And then now we've got the whole rest of Connecticut saying, oh, I'm going to wait for a call from the governor, and he'll tell me whether I can travel or not.
Oh,
and then I
gosh.
Have to stay in my house. And so this is what's going on. What's really going on is they're tightening the noose on the police state, using Ebola as a pretense.
Yes.
Wow. And you've got these people who are practicing self-hypnosis. They're lying to themselves. I mean, they're worse than the, king that has no clothes. And
right.
you can imagine the adult saying, well, I know there's clothes. This king must have clothes on because they wouldn't say he had clothes if he didn't. Must be clothes. There's some sort of pretend that I see clothes, and that's what these people are doing.
Sure. People out there fear accept protection from any entity that they feel will protect them, and they are looking to the government for protection when, in fact, the government is out to get them. Yes.
Oh my God.
But people, in their fear, that's what people do. Instead of...
And then they go to the doctor, and the doctor's programmed to turn them in to the government for kidnapping.
Exactly. Wow, what a setup. That's what I like about you. What people love about you is that you enable us to be... To act in our own behalf, to take care of ourselves, to take responsibility for our own physical well-being, to not depend on other people, but to depend, to let our immune system, to help our immune system to become stronger, and you are not into instilling fear. And I believe, that is what I love about you. and what the listeners
yeah.
love about
There's
you.
There's no reason to fear, because the problem, once understood, is one you can easily handle. I mean, most anyone can make up their mind to brew up that tea and just stay home.
Of course.
Very simple, yeah, very simple.
Of course. Alrighty, I'm not sure that this person has a question. Let me just check and see if this person has a question. 111, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Thank you very much. You know, I've been listening to a lot of the Patriot-type shows, and what they have all been saying is that Ebola is far more contagious than we're being told by the CDC, that it is airborne, et cetera, et cetera. And we should be much more fearful than what the CDC is trying to tell us. Now, you know, another thing I've noticed is that, you know, with AIDS, that was blamed on Africa. Ebola is now being blamed on Africa. And I would like to ask Dr. Daniel, as a person of color, do you feel that this is a type of racism that is going on with this? Because I also mentioned that a lot of these Patriot shows are trying to say, you know, we need to restrict immigration from Africa because of this.
Okay. I think what's really going on is whoever is trying to institute the police state is searching for a romantic, attractive storyline that people will believe, and it will get them to cooperate with their own enslavement, servitude, and ultimate destruction. And they've tried, you know, killer by a virus from the Philippines just doesn't seem to have the attractive ring to it. And in natural healing, for example, the herb of the day always has to come from a tropical rainforest or a jungle. It's just this romantic notion that people who were raised on Tarzan movies are willing to accept the concept of the dangerous jungle filled with animals and organisms and diseases that are going to kill us all, and the deadly snakes and the deadly frogs, and on and on and on. And what really exposes this as a total setup is, you know, I live in the tropics here, and we have monkeys in the trees. You can look up and see them. And there are people who do eat monkeys. And somehow there's no Ebola here, although those people who eat monkeys do get nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and fever. And so this is a totally political fabrication. And whether it's Africa or tropical jungle or rainforest, it's just that if you tell people this is an New York forest, in upstate New York greenery in the state, we found it in New York State Park, people will say, get out of here. But if you tell them it's a faraway place that they've never been and have never seen, then they're more likely to believe it. I really think that's it. Now, the romanticism, the desire to believe that there's something sinister and evil in Africa, I mean, they've got tigers and they've got strong elephants and they've got all these, you know, dangerous things. And so people, because they associate Africa with jungle, with danger, it creates a better storyline, a better picture. I really think that that's it. And quite frankly, African Americans are willing to believe this story as non-blacks. I mean, my mother is totally taken with this. She was very upset and angry that this person would get on a plane, come to America, and endanger his family, knowing he had a chance of having Ebola. I said, Mom, please, get a grip, get a grip. And so when I explained it to her, she said, oh, so his family was never in danger? I said, no, Mom, they were never in danger. Oh.
Wow.
But so it's not a matter of racism in the sense of black versus white, but it is a matter of elitism. It is a matter of cultural chauvinism, that they had to pick a story that people would believe because of their intrinsic feeling of superiority to Africa. And an intrinsic belief that Africa and anything from Africa is dangerous.
What a shame. What a shame. Somebody earlier in the chat room wanted to know what bush meat is.
Yes. Bush meat is the meat of any animal that you catch that lives in a bush. And so It's like calling cattle plains meat because the cattle live in the plains.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And again, it's this mysterious labeling. Bush meat. Oh, my God. Bush man. A bush doctor. And, you know, you do this free association with the word bush, and it gets pretty scary after a while. And
okay.
So they named it bush meat for that reason. So, of course, you presume it's deadly. Well, really, it's like an American male going out and hunting a deer and calling it forest meat. Oh, my God, he went into the forest and caught the deer.
Yes,
you laugh. You're laughing, right? But if we call it bush meat, oh, my God. It was in the bushes, in the jungle. Oh, no.
Yes. Amazing. But even your own family, it is indicative of how pervasive and persuasive the media is, that your own family,
well,
of course, sometimes I think.
Programmed. People have been programmed, first of all, to believe, they're called public service announcements, not propaganda announcements.
Mm-hmm.
So public service announcements, this information is to serve me for my own good. All right, great. So you got the person wanting to believe it right there. Then you have this person programmed through, decades of National Geographic shows about the dangers of Africa and how wild things are and untamed and dangerous and murderous. So you've got all this conditioning from very accepted sources. And then, of course, you have the movies and the theater with all the jungle stuff. You know, you got King Kong, you know, where this big primate that terrorizes people is, from the jungles, of course. And then you've got the Tarzan movies. And so you have all these triggers you've planted in people's minds. And so now here you are 30 years down the road. You just push the button. You know, you mentioned jungle, bush, Ebola.
Sure.
And they even call this Ebonics. You know, if a black person, a person of African descent has an accent, it's called Ebonics. And so this whole, I guess they must have done research on the EB or EBO or EB vowel type sound that it conjures up this big emotional response.
Amazing. Now, I was mentioning earlier in the program about a CSI program that I watched last night. I was working on my project, but my husband had this program on, and they had this virus, and they called it iBear, but they also mentioned Ebola, and I questioned when they might have filmed this, and one of the chatters said that the filming for this season began on June 21st, and since this is the third episode, he said, I would say last night's episode was finished by mid-July, and here we are in October, and I mean, tell us what your thoughts are on that.
And someone in my chat room said that there was an Ebola episode on, some comic strip series. So basically, the entertainment industry is a propaganda piece for the same people who are staging the Ebola outbreak.
Right.
And so the level of propaganda we have is really seamless. You're going to get the same story in your entertainment that you're getting in your news, that you're getting in documentaries. And so everyone is speaking and reading their script on the same page.
Yeah.
And so if you want the truth, you literally are surrounded by lies, even though they make no sense at all. As in Connecticut quarantine, you read the piece, and the facts of the piece don't support the conclusion or the action taken by the government, not at all.
Right.
And so you're left with turning to public service announcements, turning to other shows, turning to newspapers, and they all say the same thing. None of them gives you any information that you need to make any sense of this.
Right.
And so you're left in a state of confusion and doubt at best. And that's
which is where they want
is
you.
The goal.
Sure.
Right, because the story is so preposterous, you can't really get a whole lot of people to the point of certainty. But you do want them in confusion, doubt, with fear, and willing to submit. And that's, I think, the best you can get with the story this week.
Sure. One of the things that Thomas Jefferson said was that And he said a few things that I really that resonate with me. He said, you are better educated by ignoring the local media or the local newspaper or not reading the newspaper. And I really believe that you're better off. And you mentioned it also that when you first moved to Panama, that you didn't you weren't familiar with the language, so you didn't look at the local media. You were just able to see what was going on around you, and you weren't impacted. Of course, you probably wouldn't be impacted by programming to begin with, but that you can just see how things are, look at your own perceptions about what's happening, and you're better off by not tuning into this programming, even if they call it entertainment, it's programming.
Correct.
Yes.
So I had none of the programming whatever, but this also gave me another advantage, is that I was able to focus all of my attention, all of my efforts on what was important in my life and what I wanted to accomplish. So I wasn't pulled off course onto someone else's agenda.
Yes.
So I didn't have to worry about some sale they were having, because if I didn't need anything, then I didn't go looking for it, and I couldn't understand the sale anyway. I wasn't pulled off course by different events or whatever that people were having. If I had a friend who was doing something, then the friend would, let me know that they were going and ask if I wanted to come, and they would extend the invitation as a friend, letting me know that this is an event, and if you go, we think you might have a good time. And I was in no way deceived into thinking that the event was essential, that I had to go, or whatever.
Sure.
So what happened was I had a tremendous amount of my time for my personal use and my money for my personal use, such as it was. So what happens when you turn off this propaganda is you become overnight rich. When I say rich, I mean you have tons of time, tons more money, and you have emotional capital to spend on your own personal goals. Like when I was a kid, I marveled at all the fine craft work, the wood carving, the artwork, and how ornate things were. And now how everything is just so blocky and plain. Why is that? Because now people's time is taken up in all kinds of distractions created by propaganda and the media.
Right.
And they're just literally exhausted by it. People taking their kids to and from sporting events.
Well,
it could be very busy building a house for him to move into when he gets to be 16 and knows it all. And so you're creating a problem by chauffeuring the kid everywhere. So now he expects that he believes you're his servant. He doesn't think he needs to contribute anything. And then it's the mythical scholarship to college. And in college, they teach him to be basically lazy and stupid. And at the end of the whole process, everyone's very unhappy. It's like, how did I raise this kid? What's going on here? And nobody knows. And the answer is, you succumb to the propaganda.
Right. And it is amazing. And we never ask. I mean, somebody sent me a video. And I watch this video, and I'm thinking, okay, what is the source of this video? Who is the unnamed producer of this video? The video didn't prove anything. What was he trying to prove? What is his expertise? And they are accepting this 2-minute video to prove something that is totally extraordinary. But people accept the least little thing to try to augment their belief in something that they have accepted as true. I mean, it is just amazing to me that people accept so little evidence for something that is so major, when there's plenty of facts such as you've presented here. I don't know why people are so receptive to myths and propaganda. It's
They're
just
trained
amazing.
That way. K through 12 is nothing but a series of myths and propaganda. These people are kept in six-sided cubes called schoolrooms. They're fed these myths. They're given little letters on pieces of paper like A, B, C, D, and so on. And they're graded on how well they accept these myths.
And regurgitate them.
And by the time they graduate,
And regurgitate them.
Exactly. And so by the time they end up at the end of 12th grade, their head is filled with a bunch of just plain untrue stuff. And then they go out into the world looking for information to confirm the lies that they were told. And they're just a setup for the 6 o'clock news. They're ready to believe those lies, and it's a whole series. And, you know, my kids are going through that right now. They're going through the very hard and traumatic experience of going out there and trying out all these lies that they've learned and finding out none of it's working. And because none of it's working, they feel it's unfair. They feel they're being mistreated. And, you know, I try to, you know, recalibrate them, you know, say, well, you know, maybe if you work a little harder, you might get some results. But I have a degree, Mom. Okay.
Yeah.
And so what do you do with people like this? You just have to let them go out there and knock their head against the wall. And when their head softens up a bit, maybe they can let the truth in.
Yeah. Wow.
But all we can do is offer people an information source. And I don't, you know, I'm not the information source. I get my information from the CDC website. I get my information from the World Health Organization. And then I evaluate these news articles in that context.
Right.
And then and World Health Organization will tell you that Ebola outbreaks have been occurring since 1976. If it hasn't overrun the world by now, then it just is impossible. Can't do it.
Right.
This microbe is just not that strong.
The other thing that people say is, or they say, oh, you can't believe anything that the mainstream media tells you. You can't believe anything that, well, you just mentioned the CDC. People don't look inside of these records to really see what the records say. They just believe bullet points that perhaps mainstream
exactly.
media uses. And you also said the same thing about the records that when you were going to medical school, that you went into the library and that you found so many truths in the library that talked about natural methods. And that is where you got a lot of the truths about medicine, was in those libraries, when in fact the classes were saying something else. The teachers were saying something else. You have to dig
yeah.
into those very records that many people are saying, oh, don't look here.
Well, also, I did that investigation when I was in private practice. In medical school, they keep you so occupied between 90 and 120 hours a week, you don't have time to dig that deeply.
Okay.
They keep you superficial. So, yes, and people say, oh, Dr. Daniels, how did you get converted to natural healing? I went to the medical school library. I looked it up. I said, oh, my God. It's overwhelming. And the other thing, too, is if you don't know what to believe, then start someplace. Believe something. Pick it. Whatever it is. Believe it. And then look for evidence to support or refute it. And then make a decision. Am I going to continue to believe this or not?
Exactly. Yeah.
And pick your way through it. And after a while, I mean, first of all, the most incriminating thing is that Ebola outbreaks have been happening since 1976. And somehow they just haven't managed to gain any steam.
Right.
And that tells you right there how powerful this organism is. And no attempts to contain it have been made, none. There were no flight restrictions between Africa and the United States between 1976 and a year ago. Not based on Ebola. There were no screenings, nothing. Ebola was coming freely into the United States, and bushmeat was being imported by Africans who had settled in the United States. Bushmeat, for Christ's sake.
Mm-hmm.
All these things were going on, and somehow Ebola managed not to take hold. So here we are, 2014. We're not importing any bushmeat. We don't even have a single Ebola case in the United States. The one case we did have, so we think, flew it on a plane. And, you know, we've got our own Ebola right here. We've got foodborne illness. We have 48 million people getting vomiting, diarrhea, and fever every year. And we've got 3,000 dying of it. All we need to do to create a serious Ebola epidemic is just relabel that, and that's the process that's now going on, is relabeling those foodborne outbreaks as Ebola and letting all those food processors off the hook who are poisoning us with their contaminated food, their salmonella and their shigella and all that sort of stuff, and E. coli, like letting them all off the hook. We're going to call it Ebola and use it as a reason to kidnap people and take all their possessions.
Wow.
That's the game that's going on, and people need to decide if they want to play and at what level.
Right. Okay, we've got just a few minutes, so I want you to tell us, the audience, about your 3-hour marathon, how they can participate, and what you plan to do to cover. So tell us a little bit about the marathon.
Okay, so it's the Heal-a-thon marathon, and the reason I'm doing this for 3 hours is people send me all kinds of emails. I'm not able to respond to them, you know, because I'm just so busy with clients and with what I'm doing now, with radio shows and preparing new products and things for people. So I thought, okay, I'm going to have a marathon and price it reasonably. I think it's $15 if you sign up now, and it's at vitalitycapsules.com. We're going to raise the price to $30, I believe, tomorrow. So it's vitalitycapsules.com. You'll see a box kind of slide over, and you'll click it, and it'll take you to whatever, and you can pay by PayPal or credit card. So during the 3 hours, people can ask any questions they want, and I'll answer the questions to the best of my ability. And if you can't show up but you have questions, you can email them in, and my staff will get them together, and I'll answer those questions as well during the marathon.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your program and your replay radio programs, because you do have a fabulous program. People should listen to all of those replays. Tell us how the listeners can do that.
Okay, they can go to vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files. That's vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files. And that is an incredible treasure trove of shows that I've done over the past 2 years, actually 2.5 years. And I talk about, is it menopause or Memorex? We talk about the heart disease hoax, the diabetes debacle, really incredible amount of subjects. And so there's probably an episode on just about anything that you might think of. And I do a new one every single week. And last week's episode was the rest of the story. And I reviewed what instructions your doctor is doing that make him more lethal and make sure that more people die at the hands of modern medicine. And so every week I cover something concerning your risk of dying at the hands of modern medicine and give you natural solutions to solve the problem.
Fabulous. Well, we certainly appreciate having you on the program today. And please keep in mind, listeners, that Dr. Daniels is the author of Murder by Medicine is No Accident, The Lethal Dose, Why Your Doctor is Prescribing It. It is a wonderful book available at Amazon. She's also the co-author of Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? Her website is vitalitycapsules.com, and she has a radio program on RBN from 7 to 9 p.m. on Sunday evening, called Healing with Dr. Jennifer Daniels. I highly recommend that you listen to that program. And thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Daniels. We just love and appreciate you so much for all that you do. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
It starts with you and me. Thank you.